Time now for NHL Hour with Bill Clement and Commissioner Gary Bettman. NHL Home Ice, XM 204.
What a beautiful thing it is. Hockey in the month of May, the NHL Hour, sitting here again with you.
Actually, you look familiar and you sound familiar, Mr. Clement. Where have you been?
Pretty well tracking the Eastern Conference Finals for NHL Radio. So, and I was it's funny. The beginning of the playoffs seems like it was about a year and a half ago when you start to remember back that Dominik Hasek was the starting goalie for Detroit when the playoffs began, and it's a blur, but it's an unbelievably enjoyable blur this time of year for everybody.
I've never heard blurs being described as good. But I happen to agree with you. It's hard to keep track of everything that's going on. And in some respects, it's hard to believe that the most we could have left of this marvelous season is 7 games.
Yeah. I will say this. There's a void. I mean, there's a vacuum when you get in the mode of watching hockey just about every night of the week. And it's the nature of the beast when you move to the finals when there are only 2 teams left. But there's such a void for a few days. There's no way around it. But you not find yourself like, where's hockey that I'm going to watch tonight?
Actually, it's funny because I just got off the phone with my wife who said, oh, you know, there's the Grey's Anatomy 2-hour finale tonight. And I said, okay, that's great. That's really appointment viewing for me.
Well, my wife was so happy because Dancing with the Stars was clean and green over the air for her, as was American Idol last night.
Well, there you have it.
No confusion.
Now that we've critiqued it, while we're talking about the voids in our lives, let me start off with one topic that I think I need to address off the bat, and that is the scheduling conflict in Detroit.
Let's throw out the phone number. We can line up a bunch of calls while you're doing that. We'll just get that out of the way. It's 877-645-6696.
What was that number?
That's 877-645 Mario Lemieux, Tomas Holmstrom, 6696. Our email address, nhlhour@nhl.com. So you beat me to it. You breezed in typically as the show was hitting air, which is great. I love you have a sense of style. I will give you that. But one of the subject matters that I was going to get us to, you're already on.
Well, before we get to that, when I breeze in at the last second and you're not here to co-host, it really makes our executive producer very nervous because he doesn't want dead air. Although I've probably been compared to dead air before.
Never.
Let's talk about what happened and the scheduling conflict in Detroit. I was looking through some of the clips today, and I noticed that the NBA commissioner was quoted as saying the schedule for them was locked in stone a year ago. Well, hello, what does that make us? I mean, the fact of the matter is our schedule was locked in for the finals, the days of the week that we play our games on, the network commitments that we have over a year ago. And we're in the finals. The NBA's in the conference finals, so you might say, well, why didn't they just switch the nights of the respective conference finals? I haven't spoken to them about this. I would presume because of their commitments to TNT and ESPN, and I think they have an arrangement where it alternates between those two networks, who gets the East and who gets the West each year. They were locked in. We were locked in. And, you know, some people are saying, well, they announced their schedule first. Well, big deal. They announced their schedule 24 hours before we did because they finished on Sunday and we finished on Monday. But the fact of the matter is it is a fluke. It is unfortunate for sports fans in Detroit.
And that's the issue, isn't it? Nobody would be talking about this if the Pistons weren't in the conference final and the Red Wings weren't in the Stanley Cup final.
Well, and the greatest irony of all was if they played in the same arena, we would have had priority on the dates because it was the final. And so,
is that how it works? That,
because we have those dates blocked out.
Uh-huh.
And so we're only having this debate and this issue because we each, both leagues, had commitments that go back to how we have to schedule ourselves at least a year in advance. I'm prepared to take 50% of the responsibility for this, but I think anybody who's trying to dump this in our lap in its entirety is being a little unfair to us because our games and our schedule is just as important as I assume the schedule and the games are to the NBA and NBA fans.
Mm-hmm.
So And it also happens, and this, I suppose, is the utter irony completely, is this happens because of the spectacular success that two teams are having in Detroit. It is what it is.
Bill Clement with NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman. Again, the phone number 877-645-6696. We're getting ready to take your calls. What's the demographic of the hockey fan compared to the basketball fan? In other words, will TV ratings suffer? And by the way, the first two games are Saturday, Monday. All of the games in the Stanley Cup Final are 8 p.m. The first two belong to Versus in the U.S., Hockey Night in Canada, north of the border. NHL Radio will have all of the games as well. And then Wednesday, Saturday of next week, is when NBC picks up in the U.S. Hockey Night will still have coverage in Canada. But we'll...
By the way, let's pause there for 1 second, because I think of all the years that we got criticized when we didn't have a game on Saturday night for Hockey Night in Canada. And now if the series goes 7, we have 3 of them. I mean, this is one of these situations.
It's your year. You're doing better than you have in the past.
Well, thank you so much, except in Detroit.
Well, but what kind of an overlap will there be? How big a hit could ratings take? Are basketball fans going to have to make a decision, and are hockey fans going to have to make a decision?
My own view on this is, listen, everybody expects that the NBA will have better ratings than we do because that's the way everybody views these things. My own view is, as it relates to hardcore hockey fans and hardcore basketball fans, there isn't a whole lot of overlap. In fact, the sport that we overlap most with is football, believe it or not, not surprisingly because of the physicality of both games.
Sure.
I think the impact will be on casual sports fans. The ones who just will tune in for an event casually, they're occasional viewers of either the Red Wings or the Pistons, but they're not as intense about it as our real hardcore fans.
Sure, I can imagine that whatever happens in Game 1 could really drive viewership for Game 2 if a storyline surfaces that is compelling.
Of course. And by the way, and what I think is you'll see some surfing, and if one game, either the basketball game or the hockey game, is really good and the other game isn't as good, you'll see people flipping around. The other irony about this is we were going head-to-head with the NBA Conference Finals anyway. Even if it wasn't against the Detroit matchup,
right,
we would be up against the others. So, you know, it is what it is, and I'm not going to apologize for when we play in the course of the year. Our fans will find us, and we're grateful for that. To the casual sports fan in Detroit, I apologize, and I assume the NBA apologizes as well.
I will also apologize to the French viewers and listeners who watch in Canada because the games will be covered by RDS.
Yes, they will, and RDS has been doing a spectacular job. Before we move on to callers, let me give people a sense of what's involved in the scheduling that we have to do. Tomorrow we have our media day. We call it NHL Live at the Final. And all the players on both teams and the coaching staffs will be meeting with the media. It'll be covered on XM 204, of all things, NHL.com, NHL Broadband, and the NHL Network, for those who get it. The night, Saturday night's obviously game one. The night between games one and two, we're going to salute Stanley Cup legends. And this year, we did it last year in Ottawa with old-time legends from the Montreal Canadiens. This year, coincidentally, we're going to honor the Detroit Red Wings team that won 7 consecutive regular season titles and 4 Stanley Cups in 50, 52, 54, and 55. And we're going to have a dinner downtown. We're going to have Gordie Howe, Ted Lindsay, Alex Delvecchio, Red Kelly, Marty Pavlich, Johnny Wilson, and Marcel Proveneau there. So this is going to be on Sunday night. Obviously, Game 2 is on Monday. We're going to have a media luncheon with 6 of the top prospects for next month's entry draft.
Greg, we're going? We are going to the dinner?
Yes.
Okay,
see that?
Good.
You're
invited.
And if Greg doesn't invite you, I'll take you. And we'll have some of the prospects there, including Stamkos and Bogosian and the like, so that'll be fun. And then the day of Game 3, we're going to have the presentation of some of our awards. Alex Ovechkin will be there to receive his Art Ross Trophy for most points, Rocket Richard Trophy for most goals as well. Mark Messier will present the Mark Messier Leadership Award to a very special guest who has yet to be named. I don't even think I know who it is. and the 10th annual NHL Foundation Award, which is given to a player or players who have been outstanding in their work for the community and for charities, will go to co-winners this year, Vinny LeCavalier of the Tampa Bay Lightning and Trevor Linden, who most recently played for the Vancouver Canucks.
I'm going to be there for that.
Now.
Because I'm hosting the luncheon.
Are you?
Yes.
Nobody tells me anything.
Well, I just found out myself.
Oh, okay.
I was invited to, and I accepted the invitation to host.
Well, that's good. And then
MC.
If this series goes more than four games, game five will be the general manager's meeting. And coincident, if obviously there's a game five, it's also coincidentally my birthday. And even if there is no game five, it's still my birthday.
We're shutting down all National Hockey League festivities and celebrating Gary's birthday.
No,
that
I don't
day.
Think so.
But, let's go for it.
But yeah,
a cake whatever. Would be nice.
A cake would be. Although my office always.
What's the date? So we can just make sure that
that date.
Yeah, what is that date?
That date is June 2nd.
June 2nd.
June 2nd. Amazing.
Fantastic.
And on that note. Do you have anything else you want to talk about before we go to the calls? Although
nothing
we should,
that's more important than the callers.
We should tell people that our guest today, he is our first return engagement guest, is the legendary Scotty Bowman.
That'll be great.
And the reason it wasn't that we ran out of guests, but I thought he would be particularly relevant today because the last time the Penguins won the Cup, he was the coach, and the last time the Red Wings won the Cup, he was the coach.
Wow.
And so there is a certain symmetry
no
to
doubt.
What we're doing here.
And
today.
He also continues to work for Detroit and has heavily scouted the Penguins. So that'll be great. What, 425? Right around 425, we're going to have Scotty Bowman.
That's the format. And on that note, let's talk to Larry in Detroit. You're on XM 204 with Bill and Gary.
Bill and Gary, thank you very much for taking my call. How are you guys doing?
We're doing great.
You
thank
bet.
You
Thanks.
For calling in.
Good.
We're pretty excited over here. Got a question for you, Mr. Bettman. Detroit was pretty fortunate that the furthest west they had to travel in the playoffs was Colorado this year. We've heard rumors here that if the NHL expanded, that it's possible Detroit would be moved over to the Eastern Conference, which I would love to see. What's the chances of that happening, switching them to the Eastern Conference?
Well, it's a question I get asked a lot. And
okay.
In the absence of expansion, the only way that it happens is either a relocation from somebody in the East to the West, or somebody in the East volunteering to go West.
That'll happen.
No, I don't think so. In fact, somebody once floated a proposal about a year and a half ago that I think suggested, and it was not from us, that Atlanta was going to go west and somebody was going to go east, and Atlanta went nuts. Obviously, there are two teams in the West that are in the Eastern time zone, Columbus and Detroit. Mike Ilitch has said to me repeatedly, he said, listen, you know, we've been in the West. We understand that. We have our rivalries. But if anybody goes east, it better be us. We're not currently planning on expanding, obviously. And the issue is, where do you expand to? And since I don't have a map in front of me in terms of where we think we might go if we ever expanded, if we expanded to the east, that doesn't help the problem.
Right.
If we added two teams in the West,
Las Vegas.
Then some. Well, they've expressed an interest, as has Kansas City, and as has Seattle, as has Winnipeg. But obviously, if we expand to the West by two teams, then somebody's got to go east. And I still remember Mike Ilitch's words, because he's repeated them to me very vigorously many times. If anybody goes east, it should be us. And I understand the sentiment. And the Red Wings, in terms of the scheduling we have to do and the issues, have been nothing short of spectacular in their cooperation, as have the Blue Jackets.
Do you have any idea who logs the most miles? Would it be Detroit, or do you
no,
track
actually,
that?
Actually, I think it's probably one of the teams on the West Coast.
Vancouver or Anaheim
or L.A.
Yeah, okay.
Or San Jose. It's in that sense, because to the extent that Detroit is playing Eastern teams or Central Division teams, there isn't as much travel.
Or Dallas.
Or well, that
could be
well,
Dallas.
Well,
Dallas
is also a team who says we don't want to be East, but we'd like to not be in the Pacific. We'd like to be playing in the Central. And part of that isn't just travel. It's when you're in the Eastern or Central time zone, when you go west to play a game, television-wise, you're on later,
yep.
and you know, people tend after a certain hour at night to go to sleep.
Go figure.
Go figure. You know, who would know? So let's go to our next caller, Ron in Minnesota. You're on with Bill and Gary. This is XM204.
Thanks for taking my call.
Well,
I want to say that I am so impressed by the commissioner of the NHL. I've been a hockey fan for 40-some years, and I have never seen anybody more accessible than our commissioner in the National Hockey League. I think you do a hell of a job, and I do not understand why you get booed when you hand out trophies, I'll tell you.
It's a sign of affection.
It's endearment.
Yes. You know what? I've said to people, and this will be the telling moment, and I'll give the secret. If I walk out there and there's dead silence, then it's time to go do something else.
Well, I just wanted to say it would be truly nice if the season would end before Memorial Day. Living here in Minnesota, I'm sure people in Western Canada have the same feelings. But when the weather gets nice, we want to be outside after being inside all winter and being in the ice rinks. And, you know, golf comes out and baseball and everything else. And I don't know if there's a way to work it in the schedule, but I remember how it used to be. And with this season going so long now, it's not that you lose interest. You want to have interest, but you're torn with kids and family having to do everything else as well. And there's just some nights, if it wasn't for TiVo, you'd miss the game.
You know, it's an interesting point, and it's not one that I'm unfamiliar with. The problem is, in order to play an 82-game regular season schedule, in order to have four rounds of the playoffs, best of seven, you need a certain number of days to do it. And if we want to finish by Memorial Day or before June, then you have to start earlier, which means training camp would probably start in August.
We're going to rob summer from you at some point, one end.
And the sense is, and this is the business point, our attendance gets stronger as fall ends and we get into winter. So starting in September in the regular season instead of the first or second week in October means we're up against baseball and football and all those things for a longer period of time. And since there are 30 teams playing then and only two teams playing now, the impact is a lot greater if we shift the season earlier and hit summer from that end. But it's something we've looked at. We've tried to start the season a little bit later. You know, this is actually an interesting point in terms of the conflict. I mean, we didn't want to sit around for a week and a half waiting for the final, making it late. And, you know, we moved up into the format that we had created when we set the schedule over a year ago. And
we're going to finish by this. Isn't it set June 7?
June 9th, I think, is the last possible day. If I have it right off the top of my head. If the second is potentially game five, it would be Saturday night the 7th.
Yeah,
I think you're right.
I think it's the 7th, a week earlier than we finished at least in past years. I know June 14 was
Then, but we're going to get this issue again next season when we go to the Olympics because we've got to take, 14 or 15 days in a break in order to accommodate the Olympic schedule.
Season after next. 2010.
Yes.
Yeah,
season
okay.
After next. Yeah, I'm having I was out of town this morning. I flew back just to do the radio. I'm still in a different place. But what are you going to do? Ed in South Carolina, you're in a different place. Glad you could join us. You're on with Bill and Gary. This is XM204.
What an honor. My favorite commissioner and my favorite Richmond Robin.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
What a memory.
Wow.
I was only there for a couple of months, too.
Now, you have to disclose which of the two of us you're related to.
It seems like both. I like you so much. You've both got to be brothers somewhere along the way. But just a comment before I get to my questions. And let the young guys play the Olympics. Don't let the Olympics screw up our schedule.
You know, it's an interesting issue, and then we'll get back to your question. It was Juan Antonio Samaranch's dream when he ran the International Olympic Committee, and the dream of Rene Fazel, who now runs the International Ice Hockey Federation, that the best players in the world should be participating in the Olympic competition to make the games as good as possible. But it's a balancing act, and it's one that troubles me as we look going forward. When I say troubles me, I'm not trying to make a headline. It's always troubled me because taking a break in the season hurts our momentum. We run the risk of injury of our players, and we get a much better impact when we play the Olympics in North America in terms of time zones and coverage and the like. So Japan and Italy were not as impactful for us as a sport in North America or for the league as when we were in Salt Lake City, and we have every reason to believe Vancouver will be spectacular. And then we're going to have to sit with the Players Association and reason together in terms of what makes sense going forward. Anyway, we'll take your question.
Okay, so the first question is for you, Commissioner, and there's been talk about Sirius and XM somehow combining in the near future. What kind of negotiations have you started, or is it too soon to make sure that you save 204 for us, so we don't lose the great hockey radio coverage that we have?
I don't think 204 is in jeopardy at all. The only issue that there'll be, and I view this as a potential positive, is what you'll get as a Sirius subscriber of the XM offering. In other words, if you subscribe to Sirius, will you be able to get the coverage of all our local game broadcasts? And will you be able to get what is in effect XM 204? The XM side of the equation has no issue. And I think XM and Sirius are ultimately over time going to have to decide whether or not they're going to move everybody to equipment that is compatible, so that whether or not you subscribe to XM or Sirius, you can get the same programming. Whether or not, if you're a Sirius subscriber, they may charge you for some XM services or vice versa is something that they haven't resolved yet. But as an XM subscriber, you shouldn't worry. And as a Sirius subscriber, you can hold out hope a little longer and, you know, hold off switching to XM for the time being until they figure out how they're going to do this. But I think the merger ultimately will be a positive for the subscribers of both.
I'm so glad to hear you say that, because my mind is now at ease. I could not live. I'm as hooked on XM 204 home ice as Ed is. I don't know what I would do without jumping in my car and listening to as much hockey talk as I choose whenever I want. I don't even have it in my house, but I spend a lot of time on my car, so
interesting.
I'm okay.
Interestingly, I have it in my house because I happen to also like XM 46, the classic rock station.
Good for you. Well, good. The good news is that XM 204 is not going anywhere, and we're not going anywhere either. We're going to step out. Hope to have Scotty Bowman with us when we come back. We appreciate your patience. Hang on. We'll get to your emails and your questions as soon as we come back on the NHL Hour on NHL Home Ice XM 204 and NHL.com.
Well, that just proves you're back, Bill Clement, because we get Southern Rock. I've lost control of the music with your presence.
That's just a carryover from a couple of weeks ago.
I don't think so.
No.
This
wasn't a way to usher in our guest, was it? Rambling Man, because he stayed in a lot of places long enough to win a whole bunch of Stanley Cups.
Well, and actually, I think he still lives in Buffalo, so that really goes back. Mr. Bowman, are you
hi,
there?
Guys. Hey, hello, Gary, and hi, Bill.
Hi, Scotty.
Hey, Scotty, so you're the first guest that we've had back for a second time, and that's a testament to not only how good an interview you are, it has to do with the irony that you coached both the Red Wings and the Penguins to their last cup. Do you remember both of those events?
Yeah, you don't forget them, Gary. Although the Penguins, as everyone knows, have changed so much for the good of the last few years. But Mario is still there. I think also the goalie coach, Jill Milosz, he's still with the Penguins, and I'm sure some of their scouts. But, you know, it's been 15, 16 years, I guess, since I was in Pittsburgh.
And do you have any recollection of how you felt after the Penguins won that cup for you? And the reason I ask is because I remember in 2002 you knew you were going to retire. What was your emotion in Pittsburgh in 92?
Well, you know, to recap it briefly, Gary, as everyone knows, the late Bob Johnson, we both went to Pittsburgh the same day. He was announced as the coach in the summer of 90, and I went as a director of player personnel. And I went with Craig Patrick on the reason that, you know, Bob was a career coach, and I wouldn't have to coach anymore. It was really ironical. And then, unfortunately, that summer during the Canada Cup, Bob took ill, and Craig asked me if I would mind being the caretaker. We wanted to keep the job open, keep hope for Bob, and it didn't work that way. But I kind of just brought in what he did the year before, and there was some similarities though, because we weren't doing what we wanted to do by the trade deadline, and we reached out and another time at the trade deadline. The Penguins seemed to be making these great deals at the trade deadline, and even this year. But we went out and got Shel Samuelson and Rick Tocchet, and two players that really helped. And we paid a bit of a price too, because we traded a young player, Mark Recchi, who had been on the Cup winner the year before, and also Paul Coffey went in on the trade to Los Angeles. So, but it worked out well for us. We also got Ken Reggett, a goaltender. So it was a good trade for us, for sure.
When you get to this stage, and by this stage I mean we're on the relative eve of Game 1 of the final, mm-hmm. How much coaching actually is going to go on at this stage of the playoffs?
Well, it's tough, Gary, because they've never played each other with the teams that are going to play now, and no real form from the regular season. I think the last time they played was 06, but and then completely different teams. So, you know, it's two very mirror teams in the fact that the question mark from my standpoint will be which of the two defense corps as a group can withstand the offense that we should be able to muster up from both teams, and that's going to be a big factor in the series. And then the other remark would be, it's been so long when people have said, well, home ice doesn't mean much in the NHL. Both of these teams played 8 games thus far. The Red Wings lost 1, and they played a pretty good game in that loss, and the Penguins were undefeated. So, you know, it's not very often in this era that home ice has been such a factor. These teams can win on the road, but, you know, home ice has been a big boon for both of them.
Your reference to it's a question of what happens on the blue line. Mm-hmm. How do you think the relative defenses of the Penguins and the Red Wings stack up against each other?
Well, the Penguins' defense is very underrated. They've got a little bit of everything. They added some good people this year. They have a young kid, Christopher Letang. It seemed their fortunes changed during the season when they brought him back up. I remember him scoring a couple of shootout goals, and he caught my attention. And then they made the trade with Toronto to get Hal Gill. And, you know, they've got some size back at the blue line. You probably give an edge to Detroit because of the fact, offensively, Lidstrom, Rafalski, and Cronwall, you know, are a big part of their offense, notwithstanding Gonchar for the Penguins. So they play different styles. The Red Wings defense, it's been a puck possession type with experience, and Brian Rafalski has been a great addition for the Red Wings. Sometimes, you know, Gary, you sign free agents and they come over from a team and they're maybe not in the top 4 defense or the top 6 forwards, and then the new team kind of puts them in a position they've never been in before. But Brian Rafalski was a very important player for the Devils. He teamed up with Scott Stevens. They were a big matchup team on defense. He's played against terrific players on other teams when the Devils, you know, won their cups. So I would say, you know, looking ahead, the forwards for Pittsburgh, I would think have an edge, and then give the edge on defense to the Red Wings.
And goaltender?
You know, one is one and been very underrated, and the other one is on such a roll. You know, I don't know the mechanics of how he's really come. You know, this team kind of they fed off Ty Conklin. You can recall the outdoor game in Buffalo,
sure.
And he was right in the middle of a great streak, and then Fleury was injured, and what a record he's made coming back. And you know, he's got three series behind him now, and I see a big improvement in him. Of course, Chris Osgood has more experience, and I think he's played 100 playoff games. He's really a goalie that, if you look at his statistics, he's never been given much credit.
We're talking to Scotty Bowman, legendary coach, who previously coached both the Red Wings and the Penguins, and for purposes of full disclosure, currently is a consultant for the Red Wings. What's more important for a goaltender, youth or experience, when you get to this stage of the season?
I lean towards experience. Obviously, there's been some great young goalies. So when you go back, Patrick Roy with Montreal in 86, you know, he had a little bit of experience in the American League, came in as a rookie and led them to a cup. You know, and you say, well, how could he do it? They had 10 straight games win, or 10 games went into overtime. They won all 10. And later on in 93, when he was a great goalie. So I would think, you know, the Red Wings felt comfortable with the tandem all season long. That was a big question mark. And they decided to change partway through the first series, you know, when Chris Osgood was ready to go in, and he's been on such a run. So, you know, Hushek's in the background. They feel comfortable. He's worked hard if need be. So, and Conklin would be a factor, I guess, with the Penguins. So I like the fact that Osgood has had a good run thus far.
As a coach, where's there more tension just before the game starting, game one or game seven?
Well, when you're, you know, Bill will tell you, when you're the home team and you get the advantage, and you know, you want to get off to a good start. You don't like to have anybody steal game one. But once that game is I've always felt, it's strange enough, the second game at home for the high seed team is really a backbreaker in some instances, because a lot's predicated on the first game result. And you know, if you've kept your home ice advantage, you'd like to think if you get that second win, you know, let's put some pressure on the other team. They're going home. Sure, they got home ice advantage, but they're going to have a lot of pressure on them in game three. So these teams can win on the road, and I think what it'll come down to the matchups. Whatever matchup these teams want, especially on defense, you can usually get it. Because you only have two defensemen to change. You have the bench in your favor for two out of three periods, and you know it's not that hard to. And as a coach, it's very difficult for one coach to keep the other team from matching up if they want to. I mean, there's a lot of tricks involved, but basically, if a team wants to play a certain player against a certain player, they usually get it done 90% of the time.
Scotty, back to Chris Osgood for a second. He
sure.
was your goalie, and you guys won a cup with him, and you coached him for a number of years. Have you ever seen him get rattled? Can he get rattled?
Well, you know, Bill, and all credit to whatever had happened, but he went back last year in the off season, and he went for about a month of a goaltending clinic. I don't know where it occurred. I just know from talking to him and talking to people, and he is a changed type of goalie. Pucks that come into him, he's usually been able to grab the rebound, and he's a calm guy. And the big factor about goaltending is, what do your teammates feel about you? And he's been in a tough role. A year ago, it's tough just practicing all the time, and you never get a real start in the playoffs. This year, it was different for him, so I'm sure he's feeling, you know, much better about everything. But he returned to where he felt comfortable. He had a very good relationship with Ken Holland all the way through the years. Ken had drafted him and nurtured him along, so there was a good comfort feeling there. And yeah, the players they respect what he's done.
Scotty, talking about the point you made on how your teammates feel when you were talking about the goaltender, do you ever worry when you're coaching a team and you're starting the final about players getting too high or being too excited and having to calm them down?
you know, that you're right. When the final starts, Gary, the adrenaline is overflowing, and you're right. A lot of things go through your mind, and I think the biggest my first stint in coaching in Montreal back in the 70s, and I had a very good relationship with Dick Irvin, and his father, the late Dick Irvin, had coached so many games and still holds a lot of coaching records. And he I used to talk to Dick a lot, and he made quite a point to me once. He said, you know, when you're in the most crucial part of a series or a game, or the importance of a game, he said, my dad always told me, if you can get your team to just laugh or snicker at the right time, and I took his advice on a couple of occasions, and that's what you're talking about. I don't think you want your team so tight that they're not going to play their usual game.
And who calms the coach down?
Well, now it's better because you got a lot more help, Gary, when I first started. But actually, Bill would remember this. I think the first team that ever brought in another coach was the late Fred Sherrill.
That's right.
And it's ironical now that his son, I had a couple of many tough games against Philadelphia when the late Fred Sherrill was coaching, and he decided to bring in Mike Nikolic, I think, wasn't it, Bill?
Yes, sir. Mike Nikolic was the first full-time assistant coach, official assistant coach.
Yeah, so now who calms down the coach? The other coaches try to, I guess they try to hold your hand as much as you can, but at the same time, you know, there's not much you can do about it.
Scotty, we're going to let you go. Thank you for being with us. Good luck, and we will see you at the Joe on Saturday night.
Yeah, the hockey gods are shining on everybody, and I just can't wait for this series to start, Gary.
Should be fun. Thanks again. Scotty Bowman.
Thanks, Bill.
Yeah, bye, you bet. Gary. Thanks, Scotty. Could you just go on all day talking to Scotty?
Absolutely.
I mean, day and night, it would be so much knowledge, so much history, so great a contribution to the sport, wherever he was. Great Scotty Bowman. It's great to have him back. And our first repeat guest.
Absolutely.
Do we get Scotty a plaque or something, a trophy? We got to get Scotty something, don't we? Buy him dinner.
Absolutely.
Greg, come on.
Greg, you know.
Cough it up. It's in the budget, right?
Absolutely.
That big radio budget. Okay. We appreciate your patience. For those of you that would like to get in line, go ahead and get in line. We're preparing to answer your calls here on XM204 on the NHL Hour. NHL Home Ice, NHL.com. Back after this.
Springfield, Bill.
Thank you. I recognize Neil Young's voice right away.
It makes me feel 35 years younger just to hear
That's fantastic. I like your selection of music. I got to remember if I'm, if for some reason XM 204 is something that I don't want to listen to for 2 minutes, I'll go to 46.
There you go.
Why not? Listen, we've got room for a couple more callers, so let me give you the phone number. We're going to try to get to all of them before we get out of here. 877-645-6696, 645-6696. Bill Clement with NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman. Fire away. Who are we going
Let's
to?
Go to the calls. Ian in Ontario, you're on XM 204 with Bill and Gary.
Hey, Bill and Gary, how are you?
We're good.
Good, thank you.
How are
Excellent.
You?
Beautiful sunny day here in London. Yep, it's great.
Sounds good to me.
First of all, I want to tell you that me and most of the people that I know that are going to be watching this final series probably don't really give a hoot about what's going on in NBA. And that might be something you'd want to put into the next fan face-off survey that you do on the NHL fan face-off. Now, I wanted to ask Commissioner Bettman just how influential is the fan voice from these surveys that are being conducted through the NHL.com website?
They're influential because we take note of them. We understand that they're not scientifically reliable because you get a skewed response because you're not dealing with casual sports fans and you're not necessarily even dealing with casual hockey fans who might not frequent NHL.com or do the surveys as much as our most passionate fans. But it gives the fans a voice and it gives us an opportunity to get a sense of what people are thinking. And so I think it's important as a feedback mechanism. Same way I go look at reader comments on a variety of articles, I'll peek in to see what people are thinking, because in the final analysis, we're here to try and make our fans happy.
That caller had an interesting point. One more time with the phone number, 877-645-6696. Yeah, most Canadians don't care about the NBA, so the ratings will be great in Canada. I think they're going to be sensational in Canada. I truly believe that Sidney Crosby is the reincarnation of a young Wayne Gretzky, in the sense that he is Canada's son, as Wayne was looked upon as Canada's son.
Listen, I know there are a lot of people in Canada, and I understand this, who are disappointed that there isn't a Canadian team playing. But this is probably the best matchup for Canada that you could have of two American teams. Detroit is probably the seventh Canadian team.
Sure.
Based on the original six status, its proximity to the border, in the interest and passion, and even some of the fans who come down from Windsor. And as you said, Sidney Crosby has appeal to everybody who's a hockey fan.
Yep.
So this should be a good one. And frankly, I agree with the caller. You know, I'm sympathetic to the casual fans in Detroit who are conflicted, but the NBA will do what it has to do, and we'll do what we have to do, and that's what my responsibility is to do. And in line with that responsibility, let's take the next caller, Scott in Michigan, of all places. You're on XM204 with Bill and Gary.
Hi, guys. I guess in the interest of beating the horse into the ground a little bit further about Detroit moving to the east, my point is from a scheduling standpoint, not so much from a time zone, in that not getting to Montreal, you know, this is the first year in four that we played in Montreal. We don't play Toronto. And you, Gary, you mentioned earlier about a team that has to move from the east or expansion has to come about. And my question, well, how come we weren't given the opportunity when Quebec left to go to Colorado, or when the first, and this goes back even before my time, but when the first Atlanta team left to go to Calgary? Were they in the East then, or I should say in the Wales Conference, or were they in the Campbell Conference back then, you know, or through the 90s when the expansion took off? How come we weren't ever given an option at that point?
Interesting. First of all, I played for the Atlanta Flames, and I couldn't tell you what conference we were in. I was so confused by Wales and Campbell. I actually wrote a column once when we got to Calgary, polling the players on which teams were in the Smythe, the Norris, the Adams.
Right.
Nobody knew. So I'm dead serious with you. I wish I could help you with that.
And I don't recall exactly what happened when Quebec moved to Colorado, other than it may have had something to do with the expansion to Anaheim and Florida. I think we were out of balance for a year because they had the expansion to Ottawa and Tampa. And as I sit here, I am drawing a blank, and I apologize. I'm going to go back up to my office and try and figure out what happened. But I don't think anybody moved west to east. Nobody has moved west to east. And my guess is the way the alignment fit, it didn't work that way. With respect to your comment, which is the one, and it actually relates to the last caller as well in terms of trying to be responsive, every team starting next season will be playing every team at least once, either home or away. So Montreal will be in Detroit at least every other year. Detroit will be in Montreal every other year. And it was our attempt to create more interconference play. And so this year and the two prior years, everybody in the East played 10 games interconference. Everybody in the West played 10 games interconference. We're now going to almost double it to 18 games, so there will be more interconference play. And this was an attempt to respond to what we were hearing from our fans. And on that note, why don't we talk to Mike, also from Michigan, and you're on XM204 with Bill and Gary.
Gary, Bill, how you doing?
Good,
we're okay.
Thanks.
How are you?
I'm doing fine, thanks.
Now, wait a minute. Wait. I have to ask you a question. What are you going to be watching Saturday night?
Let's see. American Idol's over. Geez, I don't know.
Oh.
Oh, thanks a lot. Here's my question. First, I favor expansion, and I like the way you've expanded into other North American cities, including the South. But the one thing that I'm curious about, it takes me 50 minutes to drive to work every morning, so I get you on my XM radio. But when I get to the office, I like to be able to put my computer on XM radio and get 204 on and cannot do it. Are there any plans for piping 204 through the Internet with the other XM radio stations?
That's something we're looking at for the future. I can't tell you why XM doesn't let you get it streamed now, but it's something that we are talking to them about. And I agree with you because I used to try and get XM 204 on my computer in the office, and then I just went and got a receiver and took care of the problem that way. But we're going to see what we can do because it's a good point, and we'd like our fans to be able to access us 24/7.
That would help me stay out of my car a little more instead of sitting in the driveway.
You just sit in the driveway. Don't sit in the garage. Don't sit in the garage with the door down and the car on.
No, I don't. But I get home sometimes, turn off the car, and my wife says, "Where were you? I saw you sitting in the car." I said, "I'm listening to XM 204."
There you go. Sal in New York City, you're on XM 204.
Hello, Mr. Commissioner.
How are you?
I'm okay, thank you.
Glad it sounds. It says New York City here on the board. It sounds like you're next door.
I could be. I might be shopping.
Is that you down there in the store? No.
I'll wave.
Okay.
I'd like to get your opinion about the silly superstition that's developed over the past few years where the captains of the conference champions refuse to touch the Campbell and Prince of Wales trophies. It makes for quite an awkward presentation for Mr. Daly,
yes.
And it sort of reflects poorly on TV. You know, I'm not saying that the captain has to skate around in the rink with the trophy, but they should at least pick it up and bring it to the locker room. You know, you can't win the Stanley Cup without winning one of these trophies.
Well, actually, it's a funny point because Bill Daly and I have had this conversation, and I tease him mercilessly by BlackBerry as soon as he makes the presentation. Although it occurred to me, and this goes to the beard tradition also, you know, every team now that doesn't touch the trophy, since nobody does for the conference titles, one of them loses.
Right.
So by not touching it, you have just as good a chance of winning or losing. Same thing with the beard. Every team that grows a beard, guess what? Both teams do it. One of them loses.
So have you ever asked them to, you know, to at least show some enthusiasm in accepting the trophy?
Although somebody told me.
Last few years.
Steve Yzerman, I believe, touched the conference trophy all three times that the Red Wings won, and I think he's the one who told me that. So I think it's one of these things that will just evolve over time, and Bill Daly loves presenting the trophies. In fact, he was logging more frequent flyer mileage than anybody could have imagined. If both of these series in the conference finals went seven, I think we would have had to put him in a nursing home for a week because he was just flying from city to city. It does look a little awkward, but the announcers are good enough to explain to the viewers exactly what's going on and that it becomes one of the great superstitions and traditions like growing a beard.
I'd like to see Bill hoist it and kiss it and put it back down.
No,
I think that should be part of Bill's job description.
I think, you know, I would never do that with the cup, and I think Bill and I would be criticized if we did anything to embrace the trophies the way the players do, because our honor and privilege is to present them, but we don't earn them the way those players do on the ice.
Another bad idea.
That's not a bad idea. Zach in Detroit, you're on XM 204 with Bill and Gary.
I really appreciate you guys taking my call. Thank you. I just have a quick question about refereeing, officiating. When they go to drop the puck, and I've noticed quite a bit in the playoffs here, not just for the Red Wings or anything like that, they've been throwing a lot of people left and right out of the faceoff circle. Can you guys tell me what's up with that? I know they want to get it right, but it's kind of annoying being a fan, and I'm going to hang up and listen, and thanks a lot.
You may have your own view on this, Bill, but it's more a question of getting an honest, fair faceoff.
That's it.
And the faceoffs have become so important in terms of puck possession, scoring chances.
They have to. It's a visiting player has to declare first, has to get a stick in the ice. You can't false start. And the linesmen are always good enough about saying, no jump. Don't jump on this, okay? Get ready. I'm going to drop it fairly. And if you jump or if you're not down square ready to go, you get tossed. You have to get tossed.
And what happens is if you let it go a little, then it will creep and get more and more and more, and then you'll have face-offs without integrity. And ultimately, what will happen is we'll see a face-off which really wasn't fair. It'll lead to a goal. It'll decide the game, and then everybody will complain, how could we have let that face-off happen?
And players are cheating more now. The stakes are higher, so that they're the ones that are causing themselves to be thrown out.
Cheating is not...
Well, they're trying to gain an advantage.
Yes, okay. They're being more aggressive.
Okay.
Let's talk to Sarah in Pennsylvania. You're on.
Hi,
how are you?
Good, how are you? Thanks for taking my call. I just had a question about the promotion of individual players done by the NHL. I'm a little sick and tired of Sidney Crosby, to be honest with you. And I just wondered if the NHL had any plans to promote other players. Or if they just focus on one.
I would be willing to wager a large bet that you're from the eastern side of Pennsylvania and a Flyers fan, but that's okay.
Not a Flyers fan. I can't stand the Flyers.
Oh, really? Oh, okay.
Really?
then your comment is even more credible from your standpoint. If you look at the spots we've been doing, we're using a variety of players, both the young players like Crosby and Ovechkin and some of the more senior players like Lidstrom, like Brodeur. And so we've probably got a dozen or so players that we're heavily promoting and marketing who we think are either widely known or need to be more widely known. But you also have to take into account the fact that the media tends to focus on who they perceive to be their darling and what their best story is. And so it sometimes gets confused between what we do and what's being done around, either by the media or by sponsors, for example, like Reebok or Gatorade, who have had campaigns launched around Sidney Crosby. And by the way, whether or not you think he's getting too much attention, it's clear that he is one of our great stars and deserves tons of attention, particularly now in his third season as captain, youngest captain in the history of the game, leading his team to the Stanley Cup final. Let's go to our next caller, Glenn in Illinois. You're on XM204 with Bill and Gary.
Gentlemen, you had a caller a while ago talking about teams moving from west to east in the early 90s. The only team I could think of that moved was Toronto. They were in the Norris division.
That's exactly what happened. And you hit it right. They were moved from west to east, exactly right. And that was out of respect for the traditional rivalry between Toronto and Montreal. I drew a blank, and kudos to you. You got it exactly right.
No problem. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Steve in Las Vegas, you're on with Bill and Gary.
Hey, good afternoon, Commissioner. Thrilled to talk to you. I started going to Ranger games with my father in the early 70s, and I connected the home white uniforms as the home uniforms of the Rangers. And I would like to know when the NHL is going to bring back home white uniforms, because I dislike the home colors 100%.
You're not alone in feeling that way, although when we changed from the whites to the colors at home, it was because the teams felt that their best sweaters were their colorful sweaters, and that's how we went to it. And a number of clubs have used that as a point of fan activity. So, for example, if you go to Calgary, everybody's in red and the players are in red. It's their red out. We asked the clubs if they wanted to switch back. We actually had an extensive debate and vote over the subject, and we even asked the clubs if they each wanted to have their own choice. You decide what you wear at home, light or dark, and the overwhelming sentiment was leave it the way it is, at least for the time being.
Can't stand it. Saturday night, 8 Eastern, is when the puck drops in the Stanley Cup Final in Detroit. Penguins and Red Wings. Gary, you're going to be at all the games in the final?
Of course, as are you.
I will be there. And a lot of the XM204 guys are going to be there as well. But right now, Espo and Jim Taddy are in the slot. We'll see you next week at 4 Eastern for the NHL Hour.